Okay, let's make a start. We're going to have some fun today. We are going to deal with a topic which is controversial, which has caused some people a lot of personal agmas nefesh in their careers, caused great world controversy. I just come to report the facts, the opinions, and you can make up your own mind as to how you feel about them and speak to your own local rabbinic advisors. The issue we're dealing with today, which is critical in a number of areas of the question, does halacha adapt to modern times, is the issue of conflicts between halacha and science, where Chazal make scientific observations, pronouncements, predictions, which today appear to be incorrect. And they base halachas on those. Do those halachas get updated to the new science that exists today? Or do we turn around and say, no, the halacha is the halacha, even if the science has changed, or if our understanding of the science has changed, I should say, take a sheet if you haven't got one, nevertheless, the halacha remains the same. What do we say? And there are a number of different examples. Two main examples I want to use to demonstrate this issue are killing lice on Shabbat and the issue of treifas. There are other issues. We'll talk about those two in some depth in a minute. There are other issues. For example, Chazal make various observations about the way that the sun and the earth interact and base some halachas on those. We now understand it to be different. We'll see an example of that here. Chazal made an assessment that babies which are born premature, a baby which is born in the 7th month of gestation has a chance of survival. A baby which is born in the 9th month has a chance of survival, but a baby born in the 8th month does not. Chazal say this in Paschim the Halacha, that a baby born in the 8th month of gestation has no a chance of survival, and even goes so far, as we'll see next week, because it comes up more next week, to Paschim that the baby on Shabbos is muksa. The baby cannot be looked after, the baby is going to die. The baby has no chance of success, of survival. What do we say about that? Now, we don't Paschim like that today. The question is, why not? What changed, and how did that work? And there are many other examples which we'll see more next week of areas where more biological issues seem to work in a different way than they did then. But today we will focus on the two issues of killing lice on Shabbat and treifas. Now, what's the issue with killing lice on Shabbat? So look at source number one, based on the Gemara in Shabbos. Everyone, I'm sure, is aware that there is a prohibition on Shabbat to kill animals, one of the 39 malachot. Says number one, the Tanya Rabbi Leza Omer Hahoire Kina B'Shabbos Kahoire Gamal B'Shabbos. If you kill, Rabbi Leza says, if you kill a louse, okay, on Shabbat, I'm sorry if you're going to get a bit itchy okay, the singular of lice is louse, okay, if you kill a louse on Shabbat, it says, it's as if you killed a camel on Shabbat. It doesn't love Daka, a camel, but it means any animal. So Rabbi Leza's position is killing lice is just as prohibited as killing any other animal on Shabbat. However, the Gemara asked a question on that. Maskev la Rav Yosef says, no, that's not true. Ad kan lo pligi Rabban alea de Rabbi Eliezer ela bikina. The machloikas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, we'll see the Chachamim's opinion in a minute, is about a louse. De'ena para varava, which does not reproduce by pru ravu, does not have proper sexual reproduction with a male and a female which produce offspring. But other creepy crawlies, deparavarabin, they do produce in a standard male-female offspring way. Likely, there's no debate, everyone agrees you're not allowed to kill them. Amalei Abaya, so Abaya says to him, Vakina, a deparavarab, is it really the true that a louse, that lice, do not sexually reproduce? Is that really true? But Ha'amar Mar, didn't that we see a statement that HaKadosh Baruch is Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vazan Umamikarne Re'emim Ad Beitei Kinim. It's a famous expression that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks after the whole world from the very greatest animals to the very eggs of the lice. You see from there here that the lice have eggs. You can't make eggs unless you have mummies and daddies. Okay? Says the Gemara, no, Minahu, this Beitei Kinim doesn't mean the eggs of lice. It's a separate species, the Mikre Beitei Kinim, which is called eggs of lice. But it's not the egg of an actual louse. The Gemara concludes that lice do not reproduce through males and females. And therefore, Paskin, based on that, that you are allowed to kill them on Shabbos. And this indeed is Paskin in the Shulchan Aruch. We'll see why that should be in a minute. So the Shulchan Aruch Perush, a flea, Asur Litzoida, you're not allowed to trap it, and in Ken Hu Al Basara Ba'oitzoi, unless it's actually about to sting you on Shabbos. The Osa Lahargo, and in any event, it's also to kill a flea, even if it's about to bite you. Aval Kina, says the Shulchan Aruch, but a louse, Mutta Laharga, you're allowed to kill the louse. Why? So it says the Mishnah Berurah, and the Mishnah Berurah is not writing 1500 years ago, he's writing 100 years ago. So it's like this. Osa Lahargo. Number three, hatam, the reason is, the machalkin bein peirush likina, the reason there's a distinction between a flea and a louse, who dekol malachas de Shabbos mimishkan yalfina. Lie. So we derive all of the malachas on Shabbos from the tabernacle, from the mishkan. The yalfina misas kol balechayim, and the killing of animals is derived lechiev, as a prohibition minatora on Shabbos, mishchitas eilim ma'adamim, from killing. Why did they kill animals in the Mishkan to build the Mishkan? Because they needed to kill the animals to get the skins in order to use for the Mishkan. Shehayu b'mishkan, they had skins, those skins in the Mishkan. Bishvil oreisehem, they had to kill them for their skins. The lav dafka al yedei shchita, it's not only shchita dafka that is called killing on Shabbos. To hu adin al yedei hakah, if you hit the animal, chanika, or strangle it, or nechira, or stab it, whatever it is. B'chol ki agavna, however you kill the animal, kevin shiba al yedei zen, etilas neshama, as soon as you kill it and take away its life, chayav, that's the doraisa on Shabbos. And that is the halach. V'amrina, and we say there, the chazal understood, ma eilim ma'adamin, just like the goats that we learn the halacha from, sheparim v'rabim, they reproduce male-female. Afkol sheparim v'rabim, that includes, therefore, anything else that also reproduces male-female. That's included in the isser of shchita, of killing an animal. La'afuke, but that excludes kina, a louse, de'ein abam is zachar v'nekeva, lice don't come from male and female lice. El abam min hazea, they come through sweat. V'lachashivi bria, and they're not called like a normal creation. And then he talks about fleas after that. It's very clear, the Mishnah Berurah explains, that the reason the Gemara, and indeed the Shulchan Aruch, Paskin, that you can kill lice and Shabbos, is because they spontaneously reproduce. They spontaneously generate. They do not come from normal male-female reproduction. Why did Chazal say this? Because the entire world, at the time of Chazal, believed that certain things came from spontaneous generation. It was a classic standard scientific belief. You take a piece of meat, you leave it out in the sun for a few days, you look and see what's there, and it's crawling. Where did all that stuff come from? No one saw anything come and lay eggs or create. It must have come from, spontaneously, from the meat decomposing that produced these lice and bugs and worms and whatever. Of course now, science clearly and unequivocally dismisses the possibility of spontaneous generation from sweat, and says actually what the reason these bugs arise is because there are tiny, tiny little things, little eggs that you can't see, that you need a microscope to see, and of course they reproduce in a standard biological way. And therefore Chazal have given us a heter to kill lice on Shabbos based on a piece of science that we today hold to be incorrect. What do we do? Can you still kill lice on Shabbos, or can you not kill lice on Shabbos? And don't forget, this basis of science from the time of Chazal is giving us a heter. It's allowing us to break Shabbos, as it were, in a way which now science would say was unfounded. So what's the answer? We're going to see how the Mephoshim have dealt with that question. The second example I've brought you is treifas. What are treifas? So I'm sure you're all aware that there is a concept in the Torah, one of the 613 mitzvahs, is you're not allowed to eat an animal which is a treifa. The Gemara defines a treifer as an animal that would not be capable of living for 12 months. And therefore, when you kill an animal, you take it apart a little bit, and you check its internal organs, and you see if the animal has certain specified diseases and flaws that would cause it to die within 12 months. And the Gemara lists what they are, and says if the animal has these, it won't live for 12 months, and therefore it's a treifer. If the animal has other things, it will live for 12 months, and therefore is not a treifer and is kosher. Okay? Now, this particular list of diseases and flaws in an animal today does not match with modern science. in that, we see animals that do have these simane treifas, that Chazal said could not live for 12 months, and therefore are treif, and now they live happily for years and years. And similarly, we see other animals that have diseases that Chazal said were not fatal, and would not kill the animal within 12 months, and these animals now appear to die, and not survive. So, should these animals still be kosher, or should the dinim of treifas be redefined to take account of modern scientific understanding? This is the second example that we're going to look at. Other things, for example, one of the things that Chazal say there is that there is a concept of drusa, where an animal is attacked by a predator, and it's considered to be a treifer because the Gemara says there in Chulin that the predator, things like cats it talks about, put their claws in and inject venom into the animal that's being attacked. That's going to cause the animal to die. Now, we now know that these animals don't have any venom in their claws. Chazal said they did, and we say they don't. So what are we going to do with that? Chazal also say that if certain parts of the liver remain in an animal, the animal will survive. And it defines exactly which parts, how much of the liver, which parts of the liver, kazayas here, a kazayas there, etc. And that animal will survive. Science now tells us that that animal will not survive. Unless a quarter of the liver remains, the animal will not be able to survive. So why did Chazal say that it would survive? And similarly, if you flip over the page, there are examples where the Gemara in Chulin says that if an animal is missing certain parts of the skull, then the animal cannot survive. And we, and not just we, but for many, many hundreds of years, have been finding animals that are missing these critical parts of the skull that do survive. All of this leads us to the problem, which is Chazal seem to base these halachas on science, and the science just doesn't look like that anymore. What are we going to do? So I've, if you like, set out here 8 approaches to how to deal with this. And we're going to look, Yetz Hashem, over the next hour at all of these 8 approaches, and we are going to see how different people have dealt with this issue in different ways. 3 of the approaches will facilitate a change of the halacha, so that we will indeed update the halacha to something new. And 5 of these approaches will tell us that we're not going to take a change of the halacha, and we're going to maintain things as they were. And we're going to look at these each in turn. Some of them are more controversial than others, but I've tried to kind of systematize them for you so you can put them into little boxes and see how they work. The 3 reasons, and we're going to look at all of these in turn, the 3 reasons why we do perhaps change the halacha based on new science are as follows. Number 1, sometimes the commentators say, well, look, Chazal did say this about this case, but the case that we're dealing with today is a different case. They were talking about this, now we're talking about that. So of course the halacha for this was X, but the halacha for our case doesn't have to be X because it's a different case. If you can do that, that's neat and easy, okay? And then the problem goes away. A second approach that is taken is called Nishtane HaTeva. This is such an important approach that we're going to, in Yas Hashem, dedicate an entire class next time to talk about this. Nishtane HaTeva means, basically we say like this, look, Chazal were right, they got the science right, and that is indeed how the animals worked and how the natural world worked. But the world has changed. Things don't work the way they used to do. And therefore, what's that? We'll see. It's not so strict. We'll deal with the whole share on this next time in Yas Hashem. But the nature of reality has changed in some way that whatever we're observing today doesn't seem to be the same as what Chazal were observing then. And we'll see next time. This sounds like a slightly far-fetched thing, but it's really not. There were things that Chazal were observing every day that just don't work the same way anymore. Things really have changed. And I'll give you a little sort of teaser example. Many of the halachas that regulate women's nidah cycles are based on certain everyday occurrences that happened in those days that women could feel exactly internally when they became nidah, when the uterus opened and the blood started coming through. They could feel this, that's called a haragasha. Women just don't feel this today. I mean, that's what they tell people. They just don't feel this today. Something's changed. What's changed? I don't know, it could be, everyone's got microwaves going through them, everyone's drinking too much Diet Coke. I don't know what's changed. Everybody got in touch with their body. Something really has changed. Chazal really did observe that 8-month gestation babies just didn't make it. And now they do make it. They wouldn't. That wasn't based on a theory of science. It was based on like what we see and observe. So we will deal next time with this issue of Nishtane Hateva in many, many different circumstances. Chazal say things about you can heat water on Shabbos for a baby on the third day after its bris milah, because if it doesn't get a hot bath, it'll die. Well, babies today don't seem to need a hot bath anymore. What's changed? Maybe the babies really have changed. The nature of people's physical life has changed. So we'll deal with that next time. You had a question?
It's just, there are definitely things that have changed even, say, in 100 years.
Yes?
The tuberculosis bacilli, has weakened from what it was 100 years ago. It was a scourge. It killed people rapidly.
Right. It's a completely different world, absolutely. And therefore, to deny the world has changed is ridiculous. The world has changed. Exactly how that impacts with halacha, we'll see next week. You had a question back there?
Lady back there had a question? No, you had your hand up. No? Okay. Fine.
So that's the second approach, which we will dedicate some proper time to. The third approach is perhaps the most controversial one, which says, look, Chazal just got it wrong, okay? They got the science wrong. They did their best. And they made a mistake. And now the science has changed, so the halacha has to change, because Chazal based it on something which was incorrect. You can already see why this is going to be a controversial approach. We'll see. We'll deal with all. I'm just giving you the headlines now. We're going to go into all of them in turn. Okay. The fourth approach, these are all reasons why perhaps we would not change the halacha. We're going to see. We'll see. This is not the Pachad Yitzhak Rav Yitzhak Hutna. This is a different Pachad Yitzhak, which we'll see in a minute. Okay? Have a look, please. We're just going through the numbers here. Number four, perhaps we're going to turn around and say the halacha actually is independent of the science. In other words, the scientific reason may not really be the reason. We touched a little bit on this last week when we took to reasons for mitzvahs. Maybe the scientific reason is just one of the many reasons for this halacha, and the halacha is the halacha, and it exists independently of science, so the science can come and it can go and it won't make any difference to the halacha. That's one approach. A fifth approach, which we talked in the first year, is that look, what can I do? The halacha is fixed. There are technical reasons why we can't change it. We had a chasimah sashasta, the Gemara was sealed, and that's it. You know, we're waiting for Mashiach, and there's going to be a new Sanhedrin, and then we'll see what happens then. That's one approach. So we can't change the halacha. A sixth approach was, we'll see soon, the Chazon Ish and the Rav Moshe Feinstein talk about this, that maybe the halacha was, if you like, downloaded at a certain time of history. We talked a little bit about this in the first session, that the 2,000 years of Torah are the only 2,000 years in which halacha can be fixed, and after that we're in a different tekufa, in a different period, and therefore maybe even if the science is different or looks different, it doesn't matter, the halacha is the halacha. Seven is Chazal had deeper reasons, they were speaking in metaphor, we'll talk a little bit about that. Eight is also a controversial approach, but the opposite of three, which is that Chazal are right, scientists are wrong, and even though they think that this is the science, they'll change their minds, because Chazal can't be wrong on something like that. Okay? Approach number three and approach number eight are obviously diametrically opposed to each other, and are the most controversial and perhaps therefore the most interesting. Therefore, we'll look at all of these over the next 50 minutes. Let's go. Solution number one, which is, okay, Chazal made pronouncements about certain things based on science, and now they don't look right. Answer, different case. They were talking about one thing, we're talking about something else. Now, sometimes you can say that, and sometimes you can't. Take the case of the lice. So it's possible to turn around and say that 1,500 years ago in Babylon, they were talking about something which really is different from what we have today. You could say that. It's harder to say that 500 years ago in the Shulchan Aruch, and it's almost impossible to say that for the Mishnah Berurah, who only lived 80, 90 years ago. But there was the Mishnah Berurah just brings the halacha of the Gemara and says, this is the halacha. You can kill lice today. Are you telling me that the lice that they had in Radin 80 years ago are different from the lice that we have in Radin today? I don't think so. It's hard to say that. Even though there are people who do try to say that on the lice example, as I said, it works for 1,500 years ago, we can speculate. It doesn't really work for stuff that's just been paskened in the last however many years. It's very hard to say that answer, and therefore I think that answer will only get us so far and no further. Solution two, which is Nishtane Hateva, we're going to talk about next week. Does nature change? We already said maybe it does, and we'll give more examples next time. Solution three is the one which got various people into big trouble about 4 or 5 years ago. There was a whole big controversy. They call it the Slifkin affair. It's like gone down in history. What happened is Rabbi Slifkin produced various different books about science and Torah, in which he broadcast this approach. And a lot of people got, initially a lot of people were very supportive of this, and then a lot of people got very unhappy about it. And there was something of a tumult. Some of the people who originally supported pulled out, and other people got very upset, and books were banned, and people were put in cherem, and all sorts of things. Or at least books were put in cherem, maybe not people. Without raking up the whole thing, and if you want to see the details of it, Rabbi Slifkin is very happy to demonstrate on his website everything that was said on every occasion in that whole affair, and you can look there if you wish. The fundamental point that he's raising is actually a very important one, and is raised by the Pachad Yitzchak, which is not Rav Yitzchak Kutner. It's another sefer called the Pachad Yitzchak by Rav Yitzchak Lampronti, who lived around 350 years ago in Italy, and he was living in an age where they were beginning to debunk the issue of spontaneous generation. They were proving the spontaneous generation was not true. And they were developing instruments, they could see microscopic things, etc., etc. And Rav Yitzchak Lampronti is faced now with the Shaila. What do we do? Do we still kill lice on Shabbos? Because now we realize that lice do reproduce through Pru Ravu, and Chazal didn't seem to be correct when they said that they didn't. So this heter should not really exist. Look at what he says in number 4. Ilav the Miktafina, if I wasn't afraid to say so. And it's always, when someone starts like that, that always means that they're about to say something which they're not afraid to say, but they know is going to be controversial. Amina, I would have said like this. Debizmanenu, these days, and he's talking 300 years ago, Shechachme ha told us that the wise men of science, Hibitu ra'u v'yadu v'kasvu d'kol bal chai, they've looked and they've inquired and they've written that every living thing, yihyeh misha yihyeh, whatever it is, Havaminabetim is produced from offspring, from eggs. Okay? Because the Hochichu Barias Barurus, they've proved this with very clear scientific proofs. They've rejected spontaneous generation. In case, if that is the case, surely someone who is a God fearing Jew has to be now strict on Shabbos. The Loyaros and will not kill Loyparush, not a flea, the Loykinans are not a louse either. The Al Yachnis Atzmoy B'Sofik, why should he get into this question of a Sofik Chiyav Chatas? Breaking Shabbos Doraisa is a very serious business. Why should we get into a Sofik? Now, so far, he hasn't said anything desperately controversial. He's just said, look, you know, there's a question. This is a Shaila of the Minat Torah, Halach on Shabbos. Why risk it? Just don't kill. You really need to kill lice on Shabbos? You can't resist killing lice? So just don't kill them. Kill them on Motzei Shabbos. So he says, that's the first thing. But now he says the more interesting thing, I think. Ubudavar hazeh amina, and on this issue I will tell you, the in yishmu uchachme Yisrael rayas umas ha'olam, if only the Jews, Chazal, if the chachamim of the Gemara had only heard the proofs of the non-Jewish scientists, yachsaru, they would have gone back on what they said, they would have changed their view, v'yodu, and they would have admitted l'divrehem to the non-Jewish scientists. Which we're going to see in the case in the Gemara where the non-Jewish scientists said one thing, the Jewish scientists or the rabbis said something else, and the rabbis changed their minds. So in this case, they would also. Because I'm only trying to be machme here, I'm not trying to be maker, I'm not giving you any leniencies. And when the Jewish chachamim changed their minds, in source 5 we'll see in a minute, about this issue of the way the sun goes around, he says as follows. We go Chayzav Ahayru BeEtzba. It shows very, very clearly. Sorry, so Ahayru BeEtzba shows very clearly the Lav Kol Mili DeItzma BeGemara MiPi HaGabolahe. Not everything in the Gemara comes from tradition. Not everything was given on Sinai as it appears in the Gemara. Ela DeChachmei Yisrael Dibru Gam Heim LaFamim. Sometimes the Jewish rabbis, the Chazal, speak Mipi ha-seichel, from their own intellect, v'ha-chakira ha-enoshis, in human science, v'lo mipi ha-kabbalah, not from a tradition that they had. In other words, sometimes, says Rabbi Yitzchak Lampronti, Chazal are making statements in the Gemara based on their understanding that they got from the non-Jewish world, and sometimes it's right, and often it's wrong. De'im lo kefas, if you don't say that, lama lahem lahoinas, why would they agree in case number 5, which we'll see in a minute, why would they admit to the non-Jewish scientists that the non-Jews were right? They should have insisted on their Kabbalah. They should never have allowed non-Jewish proofs to deflect them from the halacha, if indeed the halacha came from Sinai. It's the fact that the rabbis, in number 5, which we'll see now, did change their mind, shows, says Rav Yitzchak Lampronsky, that in this area they didn't feel that they were coming from a Kabbalah. They were coming from science. And if the science is wrong, fine, we change the science. Yes. So that he doesn't deal with, okay, and that's going to be more in the case of the Treifas, where it's going to come both directions. And therefore, the fact that he's only being more machmir, he's saying as a way, so don't shout me down because I'm not really changing anything. But the principle he's saying should apply both ways in theory. He's saying the Chazal would have changed their minds had they known what we know today. This and many, many other like it, which we'll see. Okay? Yes. Yes, 17th century, the
1600s. Okay, then he actually predated the majority of scientists by 200 years.
Right, Louis Pasteur and people like that. Correct.
The first one to really prove there was no spontaneous.
Correct.
Generation.
Correct. Well, but already it was questioned in those times.
Yes.
It was questioned, but it hadn't been proved.
But
he was a bit ahead of his time. Interesting.
Because the majority of people accepted the spontaneous generation.
Yes, they did. The Gemara he's basing himself on is in number 5. So the Pachad Yitzchak here in number 4 is coming from number 5. Rabbi 5 is the Gemara. Chachma Yisrael Aymrim B'yayim, during the day, say the Jewish Chachamim, Chama Mahaleches L'mata Min Arikia, the sun goes underneath the heavens. That's why it seems to come up in the east and go down in the west. U'balayla, and during the night, what happens to the sun during the night? Forget everything you know from science. What happens to the sun? So Chazal say, during the night, so what we see is the sun disappears, and then the next morning it comes back again. So what happens to it in the meantime? Say Chazal, ubalayla, lemala min arikia. It goes outside, when it sets, it kind of goes outside the visible heavenly sphere, and it comes back over the same direction, like it comes back around again. We can't see it because it's above the sphere, if you like. And then in the morning it comes back out again and we see it reappear. So the sun basically just goes in a semicircle every night. It goes this way and then back over the top, and then this way and then back over the top. Says the Gemara, v'chachmei umas ha'olam, but the non-Jewish scientists, Omrim, they say, v'yayim chama ma'aleches lamata min arikia, during the day the sun goes across underneath the heavens, u'balayla lamata min akarka, and at night time it goes under the earth and comes back round again. Okay, so that the next morning it appears again in the east. So the non-Jewish scientists seem to give more of a, of course they're all looking at a geocentric model where the sun is going around the earth, but we'll forgive them that, okay, for now. Is it scientifically correct? Well, it's more scientifically correct than the idea that the sun goes outside and comes back over the top. But it's still, of course, we live in a heliocentric solar system where it's not the sun moving at all, it's the earth spinning. But leave that to one side. The non-Jewish authorities held that the sun went down the bottom and, you know, past Australia and all that, and then came up the next morning. They didn't know about Australia. Okay? So, but this is the key. I'm a Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who wrote the Mishnah. He comes and he says, V'nirin divreihem midivreinu. And it seems to me that they are right and we are wrong. And we have to change our view. Says Rav Yitzchak Lampronsky, you see from here that Chazal, later, in the time of Rav Yehuda Hanasi, felt that the science on which they'd made their previous statements was not correct. The non-Jewish scientific world was correct, and therefore they would change their view. As the Pachad Yitzchak said, had it been a Kabbalah from Sinai, what business do they have changing their view? They should have said, no, this is a halacha and you can go away. We don't care what the sign says. That's not what they said. And indeed, there are many, many, many sources of Rishonim and Acharonim, but Rishonim especially, who turn around and say, Chazal did not base everything they said in the Gemara on a Kabbalah from Sinai. And I've brought you 4 opinions here, and there are many more that I could have brought. Look at number 6. Says the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim, do not ask me to reconcile everything that the sages said about astronomy with the actual reality. for the science of those days was deficient, and they did not speak out of tradition from the prophets regarding these matters, but rather as wise men in that generation on those issues, or from what they had heard from the sages of that generation. So he turns around and says, don't ask me to even justify what Chazal say about signs, because they weren't coming from a tradition, and I have no obligation to follow them, because the science has changed. Similarly, Rav Shri Ragon of the Ga'onim says, our sages were not doctors, and said what they did based on experience with the diseases of their time. Therefore, there is no commandment to listen to the sages regarding medical advice, because they only spoke from their opinion based on what they saw in their day. It's very unequivocal, it's very clear, but this is what he says. At the beginning of the Sefer Ein Yaakov, there is a drosha on how to read Agadatus, written by the Rambam's son, Rav Avrom ben Rambam. And he says in that the following, number 8, the great excellence of the sages of the Talmud in the interpretation of the Torah and the investigation of all its rules and details does not oblige us to accept all their statements in the spheres of medicine, natural science, or astronomy. In other words, no one is taking one iota of covered or authority away from Chazal when it comes to Torah. Of course, Torah is mina shamayim. Torah is misinai. They have every right to pronounce and decide on Torah, but not on medicine, natural science, or astronomy. Nor need we believe them in these matters as we believe them in interpretations of the Torah, since its deepest wisdom is theirs, and it is their task to teach it to all. The Torah is where Chazal have their deepest wisdom, not in science, not in medicine. They do overlap, and therefore where the science says one thing, and the halacha was based on that, the science may be wrong. By the way, I gave you a footnote here to a very interesting little pamphlet written by Rabbi Aryeh Carmel. Rabbi Aryeh Carmel was one of the. Is he still alive, Rabbi Aryeh Carmel? I'm not sure. I hope so, but I'm not sure. I should have checked out, really. I think he is actually still alive. I think. May have asked him if he is. He was one of the main Talmidim of Rav Dessler. And he is the one who translated Strive for Truth and the Svarim of Michtav Me'eliyahu. Okay? He wrote this very useful little kuntras, which I've given you a link to at the bottom, which you can just get free, pull free as a PDF off the web, which he calls Freedom to Interpret, where he brings a lot of these views and says, you know, don't call people an apikoros for bringing the legitimate views of many of the Rishonim on this issue. That's not how Torah works. We don't throw people in harem, etc. It was written very much with this in mind. Rav Hirsch very clearly says the same thing in number 9. In my opinion, the first principle that every student of Chazal statements must keep before his eyes is the following. The first principle. Chazal were the sages of God's law, the receivers, the transmitters, and teachers of his Torahs, his mitzvahs, and his interpersonal laws. They did not, especially, master the natural sciences, geometry, astronomy, or medicine, except insofar as they needed them for knowing, observing, and fulfilling the Torah. We do not find that this knowledge was transmitted to them from Sinai. We find that Chazal themselves considered the wisdom of the Gentile scholars equal to their own in the natural sciences. That's the Gemara we saw in number 5. To determine who was right in areas where Gentile sages disagreed with their own knowledge, they did not rely on their tradition, but on reason. Moreover, they even respected the opinion of the Gentile scholars, admitting when the opinion of the latter seemed more correct than their own. Therefore, it's very hard to accuse somebody who takes this view of some kind of heretical, anti-rabbinic view. It was the view of many, many great people. And indeed, even right up to our own day, I found this very interesting extract from a letter of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman, who is very much part of the yeshiva world in every respect, he writes the following. Have a look at number 10. There is a sefer of the Nishmas Avrom, written by, I think, Rabbi Abraham, one of the main Talmidim of Rav Shlomo Zalman, on medical issues. It's a very famous sefer. He still lectures on issues. The Nishmas Avrom writes the following. V'haloim re'iti b'sefer Nishmas Avrom in Perek Yud Dalet. Yes, so this is brought in the introduction to the Sefer Shmiras Haguf VaHaNefesh, which is a Sefer which you can get, which deals with all sorts of issues of segulas and things like that. In his introduction, he brings this little extract from the Nishmas Avrom. Okay? So it's like this. Shemevi Divrei Rav Shri Ragon. He brings the Rav Shri Ragon that we saw, the Rav Avram bin Arambam that we saw, Umana Inyan Zeh, Ke'echad Min HaTamim, and he brings this, their view, as one of the reasons, She'ein Le'ishtamish B'Refuas HaMavuas B'Talmud, that we don't follow the medical advice in the Talmud. The Gemara gives all sorts of weird and wonderful medical advice for all sorts of interesting ailments. We don't do that today. We don't walk into Hadassah Hospital with a Talmud and say to the doctors, just forget what you learnt in med school, take this, do this, and I'll be fine. We don't do that. We haven't done that already for 1,000 years. And the Nishmas Abram brings one of the reasons why we don't do that is because of what we've seen, that Chazal were just not experts in medicine, and they didn't want us to follow that necessarily at all. The Hagora Shlomo Zalman Alba Shlita, which now is the Tzal, Heir, he writes at the beginning of the Nishmas Abram, "Denochan haya lehei nishita zu," it's more appropriate to bring this view that Chazal were wrong, "b'shem yesh omrim," as a yesh omrim, as a minority opinion. But the main view is kashar hatamim, like the other reasons, which we'll see more of. V'sha'alti legon Rav Shlomo Zalman Shlita, says the Nishmas Avram, I asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, mi ozer shecholik al divrei Rav Shrira Gon v'Rav Rama ben Avramam. So who argues with Rav Shrira Gon? You're telling me I can't say this as a main opinion. I can write it, but I have to write it as a yesh omrim. Who is it that argues on this idea? Because of mizelosh v'delashon. He writes back to me like this. Case just now, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, Eineni zocher im yesh mishehu shemamash cholek. I actually don't recall if there's anyone who really disagrees with this. Or afilu im yesh mishehu sheyoch lachotelei. Or if there's anyone who could even disagree with what we've just said. Ach, but yitachin shekavanti. What I meant, perhaps, when I said it's a yesh omrim, is v'hoil v'rabim kas v'tam shal shinui hateva. Since most of the authorities bring down the reason, not this reason that Chazal were wrong, but that shinui hateva, that the nature has changed. V'lahis kiru klam mipnei shipur hayeda, and they don't talk about the fact that we know better now. V'darach erufus bizmanenu. L'chein therefore hayarti sheroi lichtoy v'hem yesh omrim. Maybe you should write it as a yesh omrim. And he goes talking about Malecha Shabbos, that we break Shabbos in many ways, even though doctors today say it's not necessary. Now, what you see from here, I think, is Rav Shlomo Zalman turning around and very clearly saying, you know something? I'm not sure who disagrees with this opinion. I'm not sure if anyone even disagrees with this opinion. But because this has not been the mainstream opinion, it's perfectly legitimate to bring this opinion, but at least bring it as a yesh omrim. Bring it as a, well, there is this opinion, maybe it's a minority opinion. But there's no indication of Rosh Shlomo Zalman that there's anything remotely heretical about it, or there's anything remotely osir about it. It's just maybe a minority opinion. And I think that has to, this Rosh Shlomo Zalman has to be kept in your back pocket. If somebody accuses us and says, well, you can't say that about Chazal, you can. And people did. And maybe it's not the mainstream opinion, but it's a Jewish opinion nonetheless, and we have to bear that in mind. It's more nishtane hateva. Chazal were right. The science that they observed was perhaps correct. And now that the reality has changed rather than the science... What's that? What? Now, maybe let's clarify that since that's all fresh in our mind, maybe let's skip straight to solution 8 and we'll come back and fill in the middle. Look on page 6 for a second. Look at the opposite answer. The opposite answer is no. Chazal were not wrong. Scientists are wrong. Okay? And therefore, chas v'chalila, you cannot change the halacha. Look at number 23. Rav Yitzchak Lampronti was responding when we saw about the life of someone called Rabbi Yehuda Bril. Rabbi Yehuda Bril, Rabbi Yehuda Bril was quoting the Pachad Yitzchak. He lived a little bit later, and he very, very, very much doesn't like what the Pachad Yitzchak said. The Pachad Yitzchak said, if Chazal would have been around today and would have looked at the science, they would have changed their minds. He said, Chas v'chalila. Look at number 23. Ein l'shonas hadinim hamiyusadim. You cannot change the laws which are based al kabbalah kadmonenu, on the received traditions of our earlier authorities, bishvil chakiras chachmei mazalam, because of non-Jewish science. You can't do that. Ain tzorich lema'amin, there's no reason for a believer levakesh mimokam acher, to look anywhere else for rias, v'teunis for rias, for proofs, etc. Afal pisha yeshna rabas v'atzomas, even if they may be many and they may be strong, kitaspik kabbalas rabbi senu. Isn't it enough that we have the kabbalah of our rabbis? We don't need to go looking for science. But in Keynes, he says, in that case, Ein lazuz mimasha nifsak al pi gemara. Saying that we cannot shift one iota from what was written in our gemara. Afilu kol ruchas hachakiros. Even if all the wind of science, ha'enoshis of human science, sheba olam in the world, baos comes, v'noish v'sbo, and tries to blow us away, ki ruach Hashem diberbanu. Because we have a bigger wind. We have the ruach Hashem. And we don't care what everybody else says. Don't forget, he's saying this to justify breaking Shabbos. He's not saying this to be machmir. He's saying this to be lenient. He's saying this to say you can kill the lice on Shabbos and you don't have to even think twice about it. Achay, however, chasar das achoike, scientific knowledge is weak. The ein sich lo magi lo oimek chachmas ateva, and their knowledge cannot penetrate to the depths of the natural world. Umase bracious and the works of creation ki rahu, because it's very, very great. They don't know the non-Jewish sciences. They don't understand whatever the nature. Ki im bashtachias, they only understand superficially. And hadvarim hanirim la'ayim, things which appear to the eye. V'loy pnimiusan, and not the inner workings of things. Ka'asher hisiglu ha'makabli ma'aseh breishis, just in the way that we understand, those who understand ma'aseh breishis, k'mashe kosov haramba droshasa, as we see in the droshas haram. In other words, the Rabbi Yehuda Bril says, chas v'chalila, human science is flawed, they don't understand the depths of things, we have a deeper understanding. Now, I don't know if he would say this today. Maybe the science of the 18th century was different from today, but I actually think he would say this today in exactly the same way, because we find other people that say the same thing today, and we'll see them in just a minute. The Chida, living around the same time, addresses the same issue. 24. Of the great ones, there were some who decided to move away somewhat from the words of Chazal in some aspects. This was when they were wise in their studies and in the sciences, and they had breadth of knowledge, and they believed that Chazal were sages alone. In other words, they were just like the Rambam says, Rav Amram is quoting those people. And this was why they said that they also possessed wisdom up to the point that they were wiser. But they should have paid attention to the fact that Chazal possessed divine inspiration, and Eliyahu was frequently found by them, and their souls were from the uppermost heights, and were pure. And there is no connection between these people, scientists, and Chazal. We need to bow our heads and accept truth from the masters of truth. And the Chida is basing his Shita somewhat on the Gemara, which is very interesting. It deals with a medical issue in Sota, in number 25. Amale Marzutra, Reda Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman. So Marzutra says to Rav Nachman the following thing. Hei Chidomi Pidgara. What is this medical disease, Pidgara? I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Describe to me how this feels when you have this disease. So Amale, he said to him, Rav Nachman replied to him, Kemechet bebasar hachai, it feels like someone sticking a needle into your skin. Some kind of a skin sensitivity. So Rav Nachman knew exactly what it felt like. So the Gemara says, Mina yoda, how did he know? And it's interesting, Ben Yehoyada says, Rav Nachman was not a doctor. Had the Rav Nachman been a doctor, that's how he knows. Rav Nachman was a rabbi, not a doctor. So there are three understandings of how he could have known this scientific fact. Ikud Amri, one view is Mechish Hava Chashbe. He had this problem. He had this disease, and therefore that's how he knew, because he suffered from it. Deikad Amri, and another view is Mirabe Shmaile. He had a tradition from his rabbi that this is how it felt like. Okay, this is what it felt like. Deikad Amri, and another view is, and he quotes a pasuk in Tehillim, Said Hashem L'Reyav, okay, Ubrisoi L'Hoivino. That Hashem has given those who fear him secrets. In other words, the rabbis have access, according to this view, to inspiration, divine knowledge, which gives them the right and the ability, for sure, to rule on scientific issues, even where the science seems to be different from that. And we saw, when the whole Slifkin affair broke out, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, from Har Nof, wrote on this issue, and he said the following, looking at number 26. However, what we can't understand, we rely on our faith. It is obvious that man's thoughts are not comparable to God's in the ability to understand nature. Similarly, we acknowledge, which no one can disagree with that. Similarly, we acknowledge that we can't comprehend or adequately explain God's ways concerning good and evil in every generation. Okay, fine. In these issues, we simply rely on our faith in God's greatness. In contrast, they prefer to explain that man is the product of millions of years of development. As evidence, they cite what appears to be ancient bone fragments that have been discovered in Madagascar and other places. Their evidence is total nonsense, since prior to the flood, man lived for 1,000 years. He's bringing a view which is widespread in the 19th century, in the Maldim and Rav Hirsch and other people, that the flood resulted in a change of the way that these things looked. I'm not getting into that now. The difference in what was normal growth and development makes the bones appear as if they were 1 million years old. With this type of shaky evidence, they want to refute the words of our sages and undermine the faith that exists amongst the Jewish people. Their main concern is to shake the faith of God. There's a scientific agenda, which is designed to be anti-religious, he says, which has been accepted by us generation after generation. They want to replace this faith with the acceptance that events are determined primarily by the laws of nature. Over the page, scientists, even those who are described as religious, are ashamed that we don't agree with the views of leading scientists that man is descended from apes. They rush to find isolated statements of our sages, rabbis, and commentators that seem consistent with contemporary scientific views. Therefore, they use misleading and distorted citations from Torah literature to claim justification for such scientific beliefs in the words of the sages. All these kind of Kiruv things that claim that, you know, really there is evidence in the Torah for evolution, and then all it's all nonsense, it's all distortions. And therefore, we're not interested in the science, we're interested in Chazal, and that's all there is to say. And he stands in very good company. The Rashba, when talking about the Trafus, in number 27, says a very similar thing about 700 years ago. Look in number 27 and see what he says. Don't worry about the picture on the bottom of the page. We'll come back to this little fellow at the end of the class. Okay? Have a look at number 27. Says the Rashba, this is someone who gives testimony that they've seen that animals can live longer than 12 months, even though they have the signs of trachus. What do we say to these people who said, I had a cow, and it lived for 3 years, and it had exactly this problem? How do we deal with that when Chazal said it couldn't be? We have to ask, the person who's giving this testimony, how do you know that this cow lived 3 years? Shema shachachta, maybe you forgot something. Or shema ta'ita, maybe you made a mistake. Or shema nitchalek, maybe you got mixed up, lecha, this man in the time. Or shema nitchalfa lecha behema zubacharis, maybe this animal got mixed up with another animal. She'i esha shehesh, she say, hey, behema zu. It's impossible for you to give testimony that this animal, bein einav, was in your sight, kol shnei metra chodesh, for 12 months without a break. Can't be. You made a mistake. Ve'im yitchazek b'ta'usoy. If he insists on saying that this animal lived more than 12 months in his mistake, but Yom Eloi, and he says to you, Ki Ahavti Dvarim Zarim, I'm into weird things, I was watching the animal for 12 months, whatever it was, V'heim Asher Roei Nehem, and I saw it, V'achareihem Elech, okay? Nemar Lav, we have to say to this man the following, L'hoitzi Laz Al Divrei Chachamim Yesha, you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara about the Chachamim. V'ivatal Hameit, may this man's view be taken away, the elef kiyot sevoy, and the thousand like him, the al tibatel nekuda achat mimasha hiskimu bo chachmei Yisrael HaKadosh. Don't let one iota of what Chazal say be wiped away. Let rather 1,000 scientists be wiped away. The Hanavim, or Bnei Nevim, or Dvarim Shenemru leMoshe Sinai. Because this was said to Moshe on Sinai, and the Rivash, slightly later, on the same issue, goes even further. She'ein lanu, 28, she'ein lanu redun bedini toyraseinu u'mitzvaseha. We are not allowed to try and gauge our own Torah and mitzvahs al pi chachmei hateva v'harafua through science and medicine, through the modern scientists. She'im na min yidivrehim, because if we believe in them, ein Torah min hashamayim. Torah is no longer min hashamayim. Chalila. Ki kein heinichu heim b'moseihem hakozvim. That's what they want us to kind of think in their lies and their errors. Ve'im tadim b'dinei hatreifas. And if we want to try and judge trafus through modern medicine, okay, he gets a bit sarcastic and says lots of butchers will support you because they want to make money, and he basically goes and says it's all lies. You see very clearly that this people feel very strongly about this. That just as there are people that we saw that feel that there's no apikorsis to say that Chazal made mistakes and science has to be wheeled in to correct those mistakes in certain areas of science and medicine, there are people that feel equally strongly that this is undermining Torah. People even in our own day, in Haranof, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, they're not interested. They're not interested in this at all. Now, you know, which view in Hashkofa should one take? Okay, that's a separate question. I'm not here to say what people should do or shouldn't do. But to be aware that these views exist and the strength of these views is very important. It's interesting that Rav Moshe Feinstein rather kind of gently suggests in number 25 that even the Rashba, if he were alive today, would have to admit that people weren't making up that these animals are living more than 12 months. And he's kind of just kind of prodding a little bit at the Rashba, saying, okay, but you know, today it's not possible to say the guy was lying, the guy was mistaken, he got it mixed up with another cow, etc., etc., etc. And Rav Moshe has his own answer to these things, which we're going to deal with soon. So let's just sort of put a line under that before we move on. We've seen basically two major views so far, apart from the fact that we're talking about different things, or that nature has changed, which we're going to deal with next time with Hashem. We've seen the very strong view that science is not from Sinai, that Chazal did not speak from a tradition, but they spoke from their own understanding, and therefore they admit when they're wrong, and therefore we should do so too. And the other view, which is completely the opposite, which is that science is wrong, that the scientists will change their minds, and Chas v'Chalili, we should even reject one single thing within Torah in order to accord with modern science. Now, in certain areas, even the people who are very strongly in solution number 8 are going to have to admit that we do change the halacha. We are not going to call an 8-month gestated baby muksa, not touch it and refuse to treat it. We're not going to do that. Why? Is it because of science? So they'll say, no, it's because of nishtane hateva. It's because the nature of beings has changed, and that's why we're allowed to change the halacha. But it's not chas v'shalom, because Chazal made a mistake and they didn't realize the baby could have survived. What's the matter? Yeah? We'll deal with that next time. That's next time, Shia. Okay? We'll do. No, we'll. We're not finished now. We've got 20 minutes to go. We'll deal with it next week. Nishtane HaTeva is a convenient answer, and we'll see how it's dealt with. Now, let's go back and look at a couple of other approaches before we finish off the shiur. Go back to page 4, please. The Chazal were not speaking from a Kabbalah. We'll deal with Rav Moshe in a minute. Okay? What I want to bring you here is a very interesting another approach. And I think this approach personally has a lot of support logically and also in the sources. There are a number of very intelligent people that write about Torah and science. Rabbi Yehuda Levi is one of these people who writes. He's got a book called Science in Torah and the Torah of Science. There was a whole group of orthodox scientists, people like Cyril Dom. I don't know if you know Cyril Dom. And people of that group, Aryeh Carmel, and they produced about 25, 30 years ago a very useful little book called Challenge. I don't know if you've seen it. I don't even know if it's still in print. A very, very good, everyone who has ever looked into these issues who's over the age of 40 knows that book. And everyone who's under the age of 40, maybe they do, maybe they don't. It's the book that was doing the round about 25 years ago. It's called Challenge. Okay? Challenge. It's a book written by a bunch of orthodox scientists, written in a very intelligent a manner which is respectful of science, but understands the limitations of science. It deals head-on with a number of issues like biblical criticism, evolution, etc. Although it must be said that since the book was written in the 70s, the science is now out of date. Maybe not in biblical criticism, because biblical criticism hasn't changed since the 1880s in any kind of significant way. But in modern science, evolution, etc., things have moved a lot since the 1970s. And it's a very big error that rabbis often make to present shiurim on these issues based on science, which is no longer science. They're fine unless there happens to be someone sitting in the audience who actually knows their stuff, and then within 5 minutes the entire shiur has been demolished. In general, I am firmly of the opinion that rabbis should not be speaking at all about science unless they happen to be scientists. Then they can talk about science. Rabbis should be talking about morals and theology and rabbinics and halacha, etc., not about science. Aryeh Carmel writes a very interesting thing in the name of his rabbi, Rav Dessler. Have a look at number 11 on page 4. This view is that, look, Chazal made certain halachas, but the reasons they made them were not because of the science. The science was just Chazal themselves trying to explain, maybe based on the science of their time, why it could be the halacha was X. But the halacha really predates the science. In other words, it's not the science that resulted in the halacha, but it's the halacha that
caused them to try and find scientific explanations. And if those explanations don't appeal to us today, fine, drop them. Find other ones. Those don't appeal in 20 years, so drop them. And therefore, not like the Pachad Yitzchak, who seem to understand Rav Yitzchak and Bronte, that the only reason that that Chazal made the halacha of killing lice was because they understood this science, and therefore the halacha flowed from there. Says Rav Dessler, not so. Look at number 11. I've seen fit to note here that which I heard explicitly from Rav Dessler itself, when he was asked about certain laws for which the reasons that have been given for them are inconsistent with the reality determined by scientists of later generations. Exactly our point. It is ruled that one may kill a louse on Shabbos because the louse does not reproduce sexually but spontaneously generates. Rav Dessler said that these and with similar cases, the law is never changed. We don't change the halacha, even though the reason is not initially understandable to us. But not because the science is rubbish. That's not why. Rather, we must firmly grasp the law with both hands, whether for stringent or lenient ramifications. The reason for this, explains Rav Dessler, is that Chazal knew the law as a tradition from earlier generations. But with regard to scientific explanations, it's not the explanations that mandate the law, but rather the opposite, that the law mandates an explanation. The reason given in the Talmud is not the sole possible reason. And if on occasion they gave an explanation according to the scientific knowledge of their day, we are obligated to search for other explanations which establish the law on its basis according to the scientific knowledge of our day. Thus I heard from Rav Dessler. According to this principle, now this is Rabbi Carmel speaking now, we can perhaps say, for example, as follows. It is a known principle that the halacha only considers that which can be detected by the senses. And this is a well-known halachic principle. We don't go looking with microscopes for bugs on lettuce and for... No, we don't. We never go looking with magnifying glasses and microscopes for things that we can't see with the naked eye. What we do, this is a misunderstanding in halacha, what we do is as follows. When we can see something with the naked eye at a normal distance, and we can see that it's there, but we don't know what it is, then we can get out a magnifying glass and see, is it a speck of dirt, or is it an insect waving hello? Yeah? But we don't look at something which is completely clean to the naked eye, and then start putting in magnifying glasses and finding spots. That we never do.
Strawberries.
What is the thing with strawberries? My wife was with one of the rabbis involved in bug checking recently, and he said this. And maybe there are other people with other views on this, but the strawberry issue seems, according to my wife, and I trust her on this, to be the following: that they've discovered recently that there are insects living underneath the seeds of the strawberry. The strawberry has like hundreds of seeds on the strawberry. Before we were concerned with things which were hiding under the little green bit at the top. So we said, chop that off, soak it in some water, and then you'll be fine. Apparently, and I'm not saying that I know this to be a fact, but as was told this, no one ever thought to pick these little seeds up and see who's underneath. But apparently when you do, there are perfectly visible insects sitting under there, you know, waiting to be discovered. Just nobody looked at them before. And putting it in water and soaking it apparently doesn't get these little guys out. Now, if that... The truth with frozen strawberries, there is a slight difference with frozen... And we're getting off topic, and I'm not talking about frozen vegetables. But with frozen vegetables, you need to understand there is a difference in halacha. Because when vegetables are frozen, so the insects become frozen and disintegrate. Once an insect disintegrates and you've got bits of insect, then it's bottle b'shishim and you can eat it to your heart's content. All you can't do is you can't eat insects which are in their full form. Ask a Shaila, don't ask me. Okay? But that apparently is the urate strawberries. Similarly with etrogim on Sukkos. We don't go looking with a magnifying glass to find things that you can't see with a naked eye. You look at an etrog and you say, I can see a spot. I don't know whether it's brown or black. I'll use a magnifying glass to check whether it's brown or black, but you don't go finding new spots. The same is true with nidoshilas. Nidoshilas obviously depend on tiny little spots being visible or invisible. You don't take a magnifying glass and look for spots. You look at a cloth and you say, is this or isn't this? Does it have something on it? And if it has something on it, I just can't tell if it's black, red, brown, orange, or yellow. So then I get a magnifying glass and I check. That's how I was trained in these things. And therefore, says Rav Carmel, as follows. According to this, perhaps we can say that since the egg of a louse is extremely small, so much so that at the time of the giving of the Torah, it could not be detected at all, which is true, the halacha does not consider it at all. And the louse is rated as if it was born from the material which it grows in and consumes. And thus it rates as a lower degree of life form for which there is no prohibition of taking a life.
We can explain similarly for insects that grow in fruit. The egg that the parent lays in the fruit from which the insect hatches cannot be seen at all and is considered as if it does not exist. Therefore, these insects are considered by the halacha as though they were born from the fruit itself in which they grow and they are permitted to eat it, which they are. There are insects which start in the... No. Insects which are born inside the fruit and develop in fruit have a different status in halacha than other insects which crawl in and burrow themselves underneath and go and hide. They have a... I'm not an agriculturalist. You have to ask... call up Rav Vein and he'll give you a lecture on it. Okay? Or speak to Rabbi Falk from Gateshead. Yeah? So, there are insects. The Shulchan Aruch deals with them. There are worms which are completely kosher. They were originated inside the fruit and they never moved anywhere and they can be eaten. You might not want to eat them. Fish worms, same ideas, etc. Now, we're not... I didn't realize you wanted a class on insect checking. We're not here
to discuss insects, but what we do see from this is as follows, that Rav Kamel is suggesting that you don't like the science of spontaneous generation. Fine, throw it in the bin and forget about it. Why did Chazal say you can kill lice on Shabbos?
Because they're too small and you can't see them and therefore the halacha doesn't take account of them. Did Chazal say that? No. Could you say that? Why not? And if in 100 years that reason becomes irrelevant, find another reason. But the halacha exists independently of the actual explanation. And this is the really, says Rabbi Levi, this is the true answer to the trefus as well. Everybody agrees that simani trefus do not change. Nobody suggests in halacha that since there are animals that now survive, these animals are now kosher. And since there are animals that die, that Chazal didn't think died, these animals are trefus. Nobody suggests changing that. So why do they do that? So look, it's very interesting. Look at number 12. Tana Rabbi Yishmael. There's a pasuk in Vayikra. Bein achaya ha-necheles or bein achaya she-lo se-achel. Elu shmona esrei trefus shenemru le-moshe mi-sinai. Once something was given, halacha le-moshe mi-sinai, then the science is just an irrelevance because the halacha came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why the Rambam passes in number 13 very clearly that in simani trefus, ein lahosif al trefus elukla, you cannot add on to these simanim. Shekol she'ira lebehema o lechaya o le'oif, chutz me'elu, shemanu chachmei doris harishonim. Anything that happens to an animal, other than these specific signs that the earlier generations gave us, v'hiskimu aleihem, they agreed these were the signs, v'batei dinei Yisrael, that it was possible to live. Even if we now know, says the Rambam, that the animal can't live, it's still kosher. And even the next halacha, he says, if we think that the animal can live, it's still trace. We can't change it. Everybody agrees that we can't change it. And Rav Moshe Paskins that way, and he says, I'm not going to read the whole of number 14 because we're running a little late, but he says very clearly, we'll deal more with this next time, that maybe Shino Hetava, maybe this, maybe that, but these were given l'halocha l'moshe misinai, and therefore they cannot change. Look on the top of page 5. The Maram Shik says it very, very clearly. Rav Moshe Shik, who lived in the mid-1800s. If we observe change, and the animal lives, and our sages said that the trefa does not live, it only proves that the status of trefa is not dependent on viability. Even if it is alive, it is defective. And this deficiency makes it a trefa. It's almost kind of reminiscent of Rav Soloveitchik. Halacha exists in an independent realm to the reality of the science around us. The halacha was given, and therefore it exists untouched by the science. This is also implied by the fact that some of our sages say that a trefa can live. By his day, there were people, not like the Rashba, who says they must be lying, they must be making it up, they must have made a mistake. No, he says, look, we see these animals can live. Who cares? Who cares? Chazal said that most animals like this can't live. Seder, but they gave the simani trefas. Compare this with trefas in a human being. What do I mean? Look in number 16. A very interesting halacha. What if a person kills another person and that person was almost dead anyway? That's called someone who killed a trefa, a human trefa, someone who was not going to live. And the halacha is, even though that's still murder, they are not liable to the death penalty for that. If somebody killed somebody who was not going to live anyway, So that person is a murderer, but they are not liable to the death penalty. No, it's not talking about mercy killing. It's still murder. It's still murder. The word mercy killing implies that I'm doing you a favor. Then no, it's still halakhically murder and completely prohibited. For technical reasons, that person will not receive the death penalty. Look at number 16.
Ha'horig es ha-trefer, says the Rambam. Someone who kills a trefer, a person who cannot live.
Afal pisha oichel v'shoise u'ma'alech b'shuch. Even though this person is eating and drinking and walking around in the street, harizeh patur midini adam. They are exempt from human punishment. You cannot execute them for being a murderer. V'chol adam mecheskas shalim. Every person, however, is assumed to be healthy. V'ha'horgoy nerag, and therefore someone kills them, they are executed. Ad sheyodea bevadai, until we know for sure, shezeh trefer, that this person really is a trefer. And who's going to tell us that? V'yomru haroithim, the doctors are going to tell us, shemakazu ein la ta'al abadam, that this thing didn't kill them, they would have died anyway. Uba yomus v'im lo yomisu davarachim. If they would have died from something else. The Rambam, when he lists the synonym of human trefers, doesn't turn out and say Chazal gave them at Sinai. He says, go and ask a doctor. Because there was no halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai for human trefers. And therefore that is dependent on the reality of the medicine of the time. That's why, very interesting, the Mishnah gives an example in number 17 of if somebody fell in the river, God forbid, and they couldn't be found. And now their wife has a shayla, she's an aguna. She wants to remarry. Says the Mishnah, if we pull out of the river, it's a bit gory, I'm sorry, if we pull out of the river this person's leg, if the leg was severed above the knee, says the Mishnah, then we know the person can't have survived, and we assume that the person died in the water and the wife can remarry. But if the leg was severed below the knee, then could be, someone could survive, and therefore we cannot assume that the husband is dead. When the Ramban brings that halacha from the Mishnah, straight from the Mishnah, he makes no mention of the specific example of the knee. Because the knee is just an example that Chazal gave at the time. All he says in number 18 is, I'm not going to read it inside because it's getting late, but if you find a part of a person's body, and the doctors of the time say that no one could survive this kind of an injury, then the woman can remarry. And if the doctors say, well, this is not conclusive, then maybe she can't remarry. In other words, it's not some kind of Kabbalah Misinai in that area, unlike animal trefers, it's down to the medicine. And this is one of the ways that, you know, agunas are freed. It depends on expert witness, expert testimony. In 9/11, when there were many people who had these shilas, where bodies were never found, it was down to a question of consulting experts, what's going to be, who could have survived, is it possible, etc., 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 which obviously was a real issue. I think that we're almost getting to the end of, what time do we finish, 5-2 or 10-2? Fine, so I've just enough time to basically tell you about the last two approaches. Solution 5 we really dealt with in the first shiur, the sealing of the shas. Solution 6 is very interesting, and the Chazon Ish is the one who's very famous for this, which is that halacha was given in the 2,000 years of Torah, and therefore, once those 2,000 years are up, that's it. There's nothing more to talk about, and that's where how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to make the 6,000 years, if you like, of creation. There's 2,000 years of Tohu Vavohu, then there's Avraham Avinu till the Mishnah, and then there's the Mishnah up until the Mashiach, and only in the middle 2,000 years was Torah given. Rav Moshe Feinstein says a very similar thing. The Gemara was just on the brink of the end of the 2,000 years. The 2,000 years really ended at the end of the time of the Mishnah. And the Gemara really doesn't add anything in terms of Torah. It mostly explains the Mishnah. Rashi says the Gemara adds very, very little. We saw that source in the first class. The Igros Moshe says a very similar thing about the Trefus in number 21. He says that this could be the Chazal up until the time of the Mishnah. He says maybe the Gemara. That's the only Masera that we had. I just want to bring you one last thing. The rest of the sources are in English. You can read them yourself. I just want to look at our little friend on page 7. Who is this fellow? Who is this? Solution 7 you could look at on your own. We can talk more about it later. A little word of warning. When we say that the scientists are wrong and Chazal had a prior understanding of science that maybe is surprising and goes beyond what you would expect them to have, so that is true to some degree. Chazal do bring sources which seem to be inscrutable at the time, but actually now do have very interesting scientific application. And I just want to bring you two examples. First of all, the Mishnah in Chulin deals with an example of a mouse which is half organic and half inorganic, and debates whether it's Tame or Tahor. Can you really have a mouse which is made partly of animal material and partly of non-animal material? And the Mishnah, the Gemara, go into a whole debate as to how that works. And we turn around and think, well, that's ridiculous. How can a mouse be anything but a mouse? A mouse is an animal. How can there be a mouse which is half an animal and half of something else? And then you end up with this little fellow on the bottom of page 30, which is a mouse in which a cow genetics has been grafted into it to produce something which is the shape of a human ear. And the question is, now we are in a, this actually wasn't a human ear, it was cow genetic material, but we're now able to try to mix different things with different things, and human genetic material with animal genetic material with plant genetic material, and produce all sorts of hybrid this, that, and the other. And it may well be that these halachas that discuss this in the Mishnah actually do become very relevant. And the last example, and in many ways my favorite, have a look in source number 31, and with this we'll finish. It'll give you something to think about on the way home. One of the most unusual cases in Chazal is the following. Number 31 in Gemara and Chulin. Hidbig shnei rechamim v'yatsa mizeh v'nichlas lezeh. Mahu. The Gemara is discussing the following case. You have a cow, and it's about to have a baby. You need to know, when it comes to a cow, which is the firstborn baby and which is the subsequent baby. It's because the firstborn's a bechor, have certain halachas, and subsequent babies don't have those halachas. You can keep them and work them, etc. So comes up a farmer with a clever idea, and he says, you know something? I'm going to get two for the price of one. Here I have pregnant cow number one, let's call her Daisy, okay? And she's about to have a baby. Once she's had a baby, then that cow will then, subsequent babies will not be bechorim, and I'll be okay to use them. But I'm going to take cow number two, call her Daisy, Bessie, first number one, Bessie, not Daisy. So Daisy and Bessie, and I'm going to bring cow number two, and I'm going to line them up together, okay? And when the cow number one gives birth, I'm going to get that calf to go right up into cow number two, who's not pregnant at all, spend a little bit of time rolling around in cow number two, and then come out again. That way, I will kill two birds with one stone. I'll have two cows now, or two cows with one stone, whatever, and I will now have had two cows that have had a firstborn, and then cow number two, their next baby, I don't have to worry about. Clever. Says the Gemara, what's the halacha? And it debates the halacha. Which is the mother? Is it the first cow? Is it the second cow? And like, Chazal are going off on this very interesting tangent about who is the mother? Is it the first one? Is it the second one? And why? How do we know? Look at the Tosfos in number 32, and we'll finish with this. Kama dvarim eshkechein, we find many things in the Talmud. Deloy shchiach. They can't possibly happen. Everybody knows that you can't do this. Don't try this at home. You can't back two cows up against each other and get them to, you know, calves to jump. Okay? Umayri behem ashas, why does the Gemara deal with them? Tosfos is like frustrated. Why on earth is this in the Gemara? It says, Lidroi shel kabel schar, it must be just that we can learn it and we can receive schar. And vehit bichnei racham and v'yetzam and zeh v'yotzam and zeh lezeh, mahu afal pi shaloi yavoi la'oilam. Says Tosfos, even though it could never be that you could take a child from one womb and implant it in another womb, it could never have a practical application. So why were Chazal discussing it? We don't know. Now you know, and I know, because today in the 21st century, this is one of the key sources in deciding the halachic relevance of surrogate motherhood. We take babies from one mother and we implant them in another mother. And we do, and who knows what's going to be in 50 years' time. Now, this source of Chazal has been, if you like, activated and is relevant to everyday life. So, don't be too quick to turn around and say that what you read in the Gemara seems to be scientifically primitive. It's not so straightforward, and there are interesting things hidden away. Okay, we'll leave it there. Thanks.